Well, when friends of Rob Hersoff drop me lines, I usually listen. And a friend of his who was a partner recently retired from Weber Wenzel said, you got to talk to this brilliant guy who's in our firm called Matthew Poole. So here we are. We're going to find out from Matthew exactly what's going on with the Trump tariffs as far as they affect South Africa. Questions that many in business, and not just in business, are very interested to get insights on. So, Matthew, you come with a bit of a billing, as we do anticipate some brilliant insights from you. Just maybe by way of background, you are a partner at Weber's. You have focused on international trade. Why? What drew you to that area?
Well, thanks, Alec. And let's hope I can live up to such a high standard. So I was actually quite fortunate about 10 years ago now. We've got a random assignment process at Weber's. And my first out-of-university task, I was assigned to the international trade team and found it quite a unique combination of economics and law, which I quite enjoyed. And that's pretty much all I've done for 10 years.
And what kind of work? Just, I suppose you can't really get too specific about your clients, but maybe you can give us just a feel of the stuff that keeps you occupied day to day.
Sure. So largely what we deal with are applications by domestic industries. So those are located in South Africa and our customs union partners, Botswana, Lesotho, Eswatini, and Namibia. And it's local industries that are facing significant import competition. And they go through to the agency is called ITAC. It's the International Trade Administration Commission. And they go to them and say, we're suffering harm from imports, and are there any measures that our governments could be taking to offer us protection? So we assist either domestic industries or in responding to it, importers or exporters, in setting out that information to ITAC so they can make an informed recommendation. Is this something we need to raise tariffs on or lower tariffs on?
Is that an international body, ITAC?
So it is a agency under DTIC. Within South Africa, and they are the investigative body for the Southern African Customs Union. So South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho, Eswatini, and Namibia operate collectively. ITAC conducts the investigation, and then the decision is made on what common external tariff to apply.
So this is your world. When Donald Trump changed everything with the Trump tariffs that came in earlier this week, did you have to burn the midnight oil, or were you anticipating a lot of what actually happened?
So we knew, shall we say, for better word, we knew something was going to be happening. He had made that quite clear over the weeks leading up to it. What no one knew up until the moment he started his press conference was exactly what form this was going to take. So we were eagerly, anticipating that press conference. I do think it went, I think everyone can collectively say it went a lot further than what anyone was expecting. And there was a little bit of scrambling just to get to grips with what exactly was going to be covered by these duties.
So I've been told that you should not take Trump literally, but take him seriously. If you take him literally, it looks chaotic with these huge tariffs that are going to be imposed. Forget about the rest of the world. Let's just focus on our own country, on South Africa. 30%, is that across the board, no matter if you're a member of AGOA or if you've got any other special treatments, or are there exceptions that, you know, there's some industries that actually can be breathing normally?
So there are some industries that were exempt from the 30%. Critical minerals, some pharmaceuticals, other input products that the Americans have indicated they need to source from abroad. So they are not being subject to these duties. So companies exporting to the United States would be well advised to quickly check that list quite carefully, because there is a good chance, well, there is a chance that your products would be exempt. Unfortunately, the AGOA preferences do not apply here. So even though we continue at this stage to be a beneficiary of AGOA, that's not impacting the 30% tariff that we would be subject to.
So what's the point of a goer then if you're going to get a 30% tariff anyway?
I think that's a question a lot of people are asking. There is some residual difference in that you're not paying the duties that would ordinarily be paid, but that's a small benefit compared to the extensive duties that have now been imposed.
Matthew, who are going to be hardest hit in South Africa? We hear anecdotal evidence that, for instance, BMW exports half of its production into the US market. Are there any specific examples, though, of industry sectors that you can tell us of?
So the automotive sector is going to be heavily hit, not by this specific measure, but by the separate 25% automotive measure that's been imposed across the board. Following up with that, a number of our agricultural industries, citrus, macadamia nuts that I've seen mentioned, that do export and benefited quite significantly under AGOA, that are now subject to the 30% duty and are therefore no longer receiving any benefit.
So the citrus guys who were complaining earlier this week and asking Pretoria please to intervene, there's a whole lot of citrus they were saying in their press statement that was on the water going to the United States. But when it arrives there, presumably it just gets sent back and maybe is rots or it can't be sold anymore. Is that just a simplistic way of looking at it, or could there be another way around it?
So if we're talking quite literally in this, in that it was on the water, provided it was on the water before 6 a.m. this morning, it would not be subject to these duties. So the wording, if you were on your final mode of transport before the point it came in, you're not subject to the duties. Anything on the water after 6 a.m. this morning would be subject to these duties.
Sure. So, well, that's some comfort at least. But into the future, what needs to happen for citrus exports and other agricultural exports, and indeed motor vehicle exports, to be able to continue as they had in the past, or is that now over?
So there are a couple of things industries more generally can be looking into on this. In terms of your opportunities where you wish to continue exporting to the United States, things to be looking at there is if there is an opportunity to perhaps export the product slightly earlier in the production process, would lower the cost of the product leaving the country, would therefore lower the amount of duty that would be paid when it enters the US. With certain products, you've got services combined with products at the moment in the pricing that could potentially be split out so that you've got the product-specific pricing, which attracts the duty, and the services, which at the moment are exempt, would fall outside of the scope of the duty. So if, and another opportunity, depending on the industry, if you've got operations in more than one country, you need to be considering is because these were not uniformly applied tariffs, there might be an opportunity to shift your exports from a higher tariff country to a lower tariff country. For example, in our case, if you could shift to Namibia, it's I believe 21% rather than 30%.
I'd like to explore that a little more with you because we ran a piece in the Business Briefing last night from the Financial Times, our partners in London, who said that consultants are getting very busy already looking at that. But when you come back to South Africa itself, how many international companies who had established operations here in the country to take advantage of AGOA are now going to be reassessing? Because if AGOA is out the window and 30% duties are going to be applied by South Africa, which is what Trump's wanting to do, isn't it? He wants them, if they're American companies, to go back home and manufacture in America. Forget the economics for a moment. But that's kind of where he's coming from, his thought process. And I suppose what I really need to know and what our community would love to know is if you work for an American company that is exporting, is making stuff here and exporting back into the US, or any other company for that matter, is it possible or likely that they would be closing up shop?
So I think it's a difficult one to predict, and I take back to what you said earlier, that we do have to take President Trump quite seriously. But we also do need to recognize that he has in recent times imposed and rolled back tariffs. So I think what remains to be seen here is just how long these tariffs will be in force and whether there are opportunities to make concessions possibly and get those tariffs lowered. So it's a little bit difficult to predict what in the long term would be happening here.
It sounds like it's a bit of a game for some people anyway. But if you're working for these companies, it's not a game at all. You might be losing your job.
Yeah, I think I think for the people who work for the companies and for people generally, this is a very, very serious consideration. I think for Americans, for people in other countries, this has quite serious implications.
If I was working for BMW, for instance, I'd be a bit concerned because if half of the products that we are producing are going into a market that is suddenly going to slap a 25% duty on us, well, we're not going to be competitive there anymore, which means that there has to be an impact of it. Are people starting to look at those possibilities yet?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be considering it. I think in a lot of industries, though, the question like there with the 25%, it's applying uniformly across all of the countries at the moment. So the implication may very well simply be that BMWs and other foreign cars become more expensive in the United States. But in the short term, there isn't going to be production opportunities in the United States for those vehicles.
But if I'm BMW, looking at it sensibly, I would, if possible, relocate to a lower tariff geography than South Africa. Or is it just uniform? Doesn't matter. If you're sending a BMW from Europe or from South Africa or from Taiwan, it's the same price, the same duty.
So at the moment on motor vehicles, it's a uniform duty. So any country in the world, except America, it's 25%.
Wow. It's going to make it a lot. Well, I suppose the implication would be that people would either stop buying imported cars or buy less of them and maybe shift until the production, if one day happens in the United States. It all seems like, again, a heck of a game playing with people's livelihoods and some long-term decisions. Because as a business executive, you can't just close a plant in one country and open one in the other country overnight. These take a lot of planning and a lot of time just to physically put it together.
Yeah, and I think that's not possibly playing in the narrative is that the benefit, if they're talking of returning production to the United States, that's a medium to long-term opportunity. Like you say, you don't just walk in and turn on a factory. There's a lot of considerations with supply chains and the rest. So it is a very long-term goal if they're looking to actually increase U.S. production.
We hear from the Americans that their intention is to have duty-free all over the world. So if you've been charging us duties and you cut it down to zero and we'll also have zero duties for you, then we'll have free trade and everything will be hunky-dory. That's what we hear. That's the theory. But how much of that do you believe being based in South Africa, given the tension that we've seen between our government here and the U.S. Administration?
So I think if I might start a little more broadly on that one, is that what we note is that a number of the countries that are receiving these duties already have free trade with the United States. So their existing free trade agreements, they don't charge duties on American products. America doesn't charge duties on their products, but they were still subject to at least the 10% baseline and in some cases, the country-specific duties. So I think this is applying a lot more broadly than just to countries that are still imposing tariffs on the United States. And the difficulty we have, of course, with South Africa, the particular issues with them, but free trade agreements generally are very large, very complex agreements to be negotiated. They're not agreements that come into force overnight. It takes a number of years of negotiation. And then following that, usually a period of implementation. So free trade isn't something that's going to happen overnight.
So when you advise your clients here who clearly need help, what are you saying to them? Go to the point that you made a little earlier and that the FT was making yesterday, try and reduce the value of the product that you're exporting by taking out whatever costs you can, marketing costs, consulting costs, just get it down to the bare bones, because you have to plan for these tariffs coming onto your products, at least in the short term.
So there is that, but there's also advice for companies that are producing in South Africa to start looking a little more, say, medium to long term on this, on what the implications, not only on our exports to the United States, but what are going to be the implications in our own market that follow from this.
Okay. And elaborate?
So just to elaborate there is that what we can expect is at least there will be a shift in the countries that are exporting to the United States. And if in a particular industry production does ramp up, there will be an overall decline in those exports going to the United States. So those exports are going to have to be looking for a new home. So if countries were exporting to the United States and aren't exporting there anymore, they're going to start looking possibly European Union, possibly other countries, where they're going to then try and shift those volumes. So South Africa won't necessarily be first in the list of countries they'll be looking to, but the knock-on impact is going to likely be increased import volumes coming into our own country. So if you're a domestic producer in the SACU region, it's something to be considering, is what measures do we need to be looking at to protect our own market following this?
Oh, and it can just, where does it end? Where it seems like there would be a knock-on effect there. Take ArcelorMittal as an example, and the saga that they've been going through on the whole protection or not of steel in South Africa. Would we see similar kind of, in your view, similar kind of discussions being made on a range of industries now? And the point you make about exports from other countries being switched to new markets, including ours, which would have an obvious impact on domestic production.
Sure. So I think it's going to go quite broadly and across quite a wide range of industries. And certainly if I was producing any product in South Africa, it's something I'd be looking at. So it's assessing the level of exposure currently to imports, and then having a look at which of the possible protective measures might be available and starting down that process.
What would you be advising Pretoria? That just seems like a tit-for-tat kind of approach. They're putting up tariffs, so we must put up tariffs. And the Smoot-Hawley Act, we know when that came in 1930, that sent the world into the Great Depression. It seems like we're on path if the scenario that you've outlined now comes to fruition. We're on path for another Great Depression. And then we're going to have much bigger challenges than those that we might be looking at the moment. So how would you be advising Pretoria if you were called into the brains trust of the Government of National Unity?
Sure. So I think it's a little more nuanced than just a tit for tat in the way that South Africa approaches these. So if we look at the American approach, very uniform, all products, all countries. South Africa takes a lot more of a focused one in, do we have a particular industry here that we need to offer protection to? And quite a lengthy, reasoned explanation on it. It also operates slightly differently in South Africa in that we wouldn't be raising these duties, particularly against the United States. We would be raising them, depending on the duty, on a much, much broader, almost universal level. For these particular industries. There is obviously, the historic precedent that we look to, that where everyone starts raising protection, in the end, everyone does suffer. But I fear in this one, we would be following the lead of, if we are not the ones raising protection, quite possibly we're going to be suffering more.
And how would we be suffering more?
So if we are the market that hasn't raised protective barriers when every other market has, we're going to be the primary target for imports.
In other words, dumping.
It might be dumping. It could be so-called fair trade, just at volumes and prices that our domestic industries wouldn't be able to compete with.
So what happens in this scenario, the whole of this scenario, to the World Trade Organization?
So the World Trade Organization is already in, as I'm sure you know, quite a difficult position at the moment. It has been now for a number of years operating without its highest appellate body. So it is difficult for countries to raise and then fully settle their disputes at the WTO. So it will still be operating. It will still be trying to support its goal of multilateral approach to trade. But it is more difficult when countries are acting independently.
Matthew, this is a really gloomy scenario that you've painted for us. Is there any bright light? Is there any upside somewhere that some sense can be brought to bear?
So I think if what little bright light we would be looking for, I think in South Africa in particular, is going to sit within those industries then and products that have been exempt. So a large portion of our minerals industry has been exempt there and will continue on their exports to the United States. And I think that's where that bright light would sit.
But outside of that, anything to do with manufacturing, is in particular our motor industry, which we already subsidize as consumers very heavily with a 30% duty that we pay on any imported cars. So it's not like we haven't already been, in a way, subsidizing or the consumer hasn't been subsidizing the motor sector. This surely would require a bit of a rethink there.
If these tariffs remain in force for an extended period of time, it would probably require a rethink.
So how are you seeing this all playing out? If, but, yes, no. If you were to put your neck on a line on the line and to say, if we look back on this in a year's time, there are some who say that it is a negotiating position by Donald Trump, that he'll negotiate individually with countries, but he's not too keen to be negotiating with South Africa. Certainly not the way things are standing at the moment. But how would you see this all working out? Maybe give us an upside and a downside.
Sure. I think if you, as you say, neck on the line, I think a year from now, it's going to be, it's still probably going to be a negative implication, particularly for us here in South Africa. I'm sure for many countries in a year's time, the negotiations will have negated those duties. I don't think it will be all countries, and I'm not sure it will include us.
So your recommendation then to your clients would be, look, there's a hard position in Pretoria. Just prepare for the worst and try and do what you can. Maybe set up an operation in Namibia to help a little. Or Zim. Zim are doing their best to try and get zero tariffs from their side. So I suppose there will be the outliers here. But if you're running a business, you can't just switch on and off the export tap. You better start preparing for the worst if you're South African.
So I think not just if you're South African, I think if you're based anywhere, you do need to start making those preparations. But I think it's also a question of being as flexible as possible in your operations. This is a situation which does change, and he has, in his short time he has been in office for this term, changed position a number of times. So it's a matter of keeping careful focus, keeping up to date on all the steps that are being taken in Washington, and being ready to react as quickly as possible.
And those exempt industries, you said minerals, is that pretty much all of our mineral exports, or are there any that are not going to benefit?
So it is a large portion. It is not all of our mineral exports. Unfortunately, I don't have the full list in front of me, but a large portion of our minerals. It's also pharmaceuticals, semiconductors, and lumber articles, and some energy and related products that are exempt on that. So there is quite an extensive list. I mean, that's the highlights, but there is quite an extensive list of excluded products.
Just to close off with, Sasol has got a huge operation in Louisiana, Lake Charles. In fact, when they were building it, they were the biggest foreign investor into the United States at that time. The Sasol share price has just tumbled, along with most or many other stocks in the energy sector. Is there any benefit in this for a Sasol or a South African company that has got an operation, a manufacturing operation in the United States? Because from watching Donald Trump address the plenary in Davos in January this year, from listening to all of his or many of his officials, they want companies to come to America and to manufacture there. Now, Sasol's there already. Would there be a benefit? Would it be an outlier in this case?
So if you do have production facilities already operational in America, and in particular, if you have facilities that have the capacity to expand quite rapidly, there is going to be an opportunity in this. You may face the difficulty a number of American companies are facing in sourcing components or input materials that do need to get sourced overseas. But if you are able to expand and particularly rapidly expand your production in America, it's definitely an opportunity for companies like that.
Sadly, there are not too many South African companies outside of Sasol and I think Sibanye-Stillwater that are publicly well known with those facilities there. Matthew Poole is a partner at Weber Wenzel. Thanks for enlightening us. Even though the news is not great, who knows? We need to keep an eye on it, I think, is the big message to come out of this conversation. And I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.